Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women.
And after all these beers, there's going to be some hard rain coming out of our penises. I'm Mike.
And stuff's going to come out of our moon.
It's going to explode.
Explode out of our moon.
It's going to be a brown sky.
Best intro we've ever done.
Yes. Cut it now. It's done. It's all downhill from here. I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading Seven Eves by Niall Stephenson.
Oh, pronounced in the regional way, yes.
Oh, I'm doing it the way they pronounce it 5,000 years from now, when they kind of know how people talk now. By Niall Stephenson. And I guess I'm starting with beer, because no one else dibs it. This book was also published under the ISBN for an Algebra 2 textbook. not to give too much away, but pretty soon into the book, everyone's going to die on Earth. Statistically, like 99.9 repeating percent of people are about to die. And you'd think, they probably, should we go to the mortician? No, we probably shouldn't. This is Morticia from Barrier, which we've had this before, I'm pretty sure.
Probably.
A bourbon soaked oak barrel spirals and coffee beer. It's like, fuck, that's like not English. Imperial stout brewed with milk, sugar, and conditioned on oak spirals and coffee. There you go.
It's Angliski.
Sarastaman, or whatever the fuck that word was they kept saying. And it's still good. Okay. So, Nate, you picked this. Good luck.
Okay. So, I read this when it came out. And so this, a couple months ago, when we're picking books that we actually like for a change, I was like, you know what? I really liked that. And then when I read it, I realized I forgot that third part was there. Ooh. Yeah. Oops.
I forgot the third of the book was there.
I think the middle part is very good. But, okay.
Like a sandwich.
So this is... So
it's like a sandwich made on shit bread.
So Seven Eves is science fiction, and it is definitely the kind of, and Niall Stephenson, whatever the fuck I say his name, is the kind of author who writes enormously long books filled with...
Other books.
Filled with an enormous amount of scientific detail. Like,
would you say that they are
detail.
Long, hard sci-fi books?
This is the Caligula of hard sci-fi. Like, this is...
It's like the Viagra factory.
It is triple X rated. It's like, I can't believe I fit the whole thing in my ass, volume 32, hardcore science fiction.
Yeah.
Like, I had to stop several times to masturbate. So, Jimmy, we're gonna have a beer there?
No.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to have a beer, because, okay. So
that's
going to
help us sleepy, Nate.
Oh, yeah, very much. This is extremely technical science fiction, which I like, I think is interesting. I totally understand how other people... wouldn't like it though, because it makes the book extremely long, and a lot of the book is just about how one character will solve this one little technical problem, and then the next character will solve a different little technical problem, then a different bad thing will happen, and it'll be another little technical problem, and that's kind of a lot of the book. I find that very interesting.
It rounds up all of the book, actually.
It really does. Not the third part of the book, because it just kind of, well, we'll get there. Okay, so, in the very beginning, like the first page, the moon, it takes place, on Earth present day, or really like the present day of 2015, Earth present day, the moon explodes. No one ever knows why. It's never explained, and it's never fully explored. It's quickly conjectured that it was a very small black hole traveling extremely fast, but no one knows. It's really not the point of the book. So, the first, like, chapter or two, the people are like, wow, that's so cool. And then a scientist named Doc Dubois, who is really just Neil deGrasse Tyson, does some math and figures out that, wait a minute, those pieces of the moon, because the moon just, like, shatters into many pieces, and then they collide
it's
with each other in orbit.
And then you're like, is that what this is called? Seven Eves? No, it's not. But there are seven pieces of moon.
But then they collide with each other and then break into even more pieces, and those pieces collide, and those pieces collide, and it's an exponential process. There is a bunch of math in this book. So within a...
I guessed C for all those questions in the book.
For after just only a couple days, a week or two, the Neil deGrasse Tyson figures out, Doc Dubois, also known as Neil deGrasse Tyson, figures out that those chunks of the moon are going to become asteroids, and they are going to fall down on the Earth. Like, they will, it will take in it, after all the physicists in the world kind of figure it out, it's really going to be about 2 years or 23 months in the book. It's going to, that's how long it's going to take for a lot of chunks of the moon to really fall down onto Earth. And when it does, it is just going to like destroy everything. And there are going to be so many asteroids falling on Earth at the same time, like billions. That is going to heat up the atmosphere. It's so much that everything on Earth is going to die. Like all humans, all life on Earth will be wiped out. Maybe something in the deep oceans will survive, but probably not. Like spoiler. All life on Earth will die. And so all the countries of the world... really get together, and they start to figure out how to save as many people as possible. And what they do is they make the International Space Station, like that eight people on the International Space Station, like, well, you guys aren't coming back. Instead, we're just going to keep launching stuff into space, and we're going to make and as many people as we can, and as many scientists and engineers and all this other stuff. We're going to keep launching into space, and and we have about 2 years, and you're going to live there, and you're going to survive
for 5,000 years.
Yeah, they're like, it's going to take thousands of years for the Earth to cool down so it can cool down enough to be inhabited again. So you're going to figure out how to live for 5,000 years.
Nate, this is the longest intro to a beer we've ever had.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot I opened it. So anyway, up on the space station, one of the characters named Dinah is a robotics expert. And so she's an astronaut, and she does all that robot stuff.
Going.
And so she's going to need this book call. She's going to need to save the robots. There you go. I have limited beer options right now. So this is what
I find. That's from Radiant Pig, I think, right?
It is, yes. And it's a hazy IPA.
That is definitely...
Now you're going to make me try and outdo you next time.
Just start and then say it. Well, tell us what you thought and then open the beer.
this beer is called Fan Mail.
So that's the beginning. And you're like, okay, where could it go from here? And I instantly, because I don't fucking know anything... about science, like, that's absolutely not what the United States would do. They're like, now we're going to blow up those fucking moon bits. We're going to nuke the shit out of that. There's just no way that they'd be like, all right, I guess everybody dies. That's that would create just worldwide chaos.
So they're going to Armageddon it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It worked in the movie.
Absolutely. And Bruce Willis died. I mean, that was fine.
Would you rather everyone die or just Bruce Willis?
I'll sacrifice 10 Bruce Willises. He could die hard with a vengeance in space. He could die hard so we can live free. I don't know. But there's just no way that every government would just like, oh, fuck it. We're done. And all the lizard people that run the countries of the world would be like, all right, I guess we're just dying now. Please.
Please. They would obviously get back on their spaceships and, you know...
Yeah, that, all of a sudden, like, well, there's no world leaders or billionaires left. Where'd they all go? And there's a lot fewer crop circles now. That was the first of many ridiculous things you have to just accept, that all the world's governments are just like, yeah, I guess we're all just sending up space consoles that are the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. We're just going to spend them up. And everything in the world... all industry stops basically to support this, and they can only save like 1,200 people. Come on, yes. There's a lot of fucking factories.
That's and everybody keeps working at Applebee's.
Dude, you know what? I went to Applebee's the other day, and this book filled me with a lot of questions that the author never really addressed, which is why I hate this book. But one of the things that happens is right away, which I was really happy about, like tech bro billionaires are all poor because the stock market just ceases to exist and most really rich people, their wealth is just stock. So they were all of a sudden weren't worth money anymore. It's like, yeah, crypto, fuckhead, and they're all just poor now.
Neal Stephenson exists in that weird, I don't know, if there's a Venn diagram of like technocratic libertarian sci-fi where...
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, these tech bros suck, but just the ones who are just business people pretend to be tech bros because actual tech bros, they fuck in these books. And one saves the human race in this book.
That's the only one of his I've read, but I get that vibe. But anyway, but Applebee's. I had to go to Applebee's recently because my kid like read a book at the library and you get a free Sunday at Applebee's. So we're like trying to encourage that. You know, it's like a library thing over the summer at the library. And we had Applebee's. And I'm just going to get back to the book, I promise. And we just said the next, my wife and I barely got home before we both had horrific diarrhea from eating. We were both like, just good luck, kid. And we just both ran to a separate place to just, it was such a bad shit. Like, I couldn't even play on my phone. I had to just like sit and focus on that.
Just sweat.
I was just like, oh no. And then just pain. And I was like, why? Chimichanga, wrap wontons, or whatever bullshit we had eaten.
I haven't been to an Applebee's in like a decade.
It's so bad. And so then we both came out like, what the fuck?
5 years ago, maybe. I went to a TGI Fridays a few months ago. Hadn't been there in forever. I got the bacon cheeseburger, and he's like, do you want to add a second patty for $5? I was like, well, I didn't know that was an option, but of course I have to do that now that I know, so fuck me. And then I ate the whole thing.
Did he offer? Would you like to add a third for $3? Like, just till, you know, how many patties till I break even?
How much until this costs you?
But we both had horrific diarrhea, and we both like, I can't believe that fucking. And my kid was like, I love Applebee's. Like, oh no, it is not good in that neighborhood. It was bad. It was Crapplebee's. But then I was reading this book and thinking like, what's the meaning of life? And like thinking about rich people losing all their fortunes, and I thought. You know, I usually have my rich fantasies, like what my rich life is like. And I actually, my realistic one now is I just want to be rich enough to never go to Applebee's again. Like to never consider that food.
I think you're already there.
You I am, but like, but to never to be like, I don't ever want to be like on a road trip and you're like, what should we get for dinner? Like it's getting late. The kids are hungry. Like, oh, I guess we'll stop at Applebee's. I don't even want to consider that. I want it to Denny's be beneath me. And because it was so bad. But the tech bros, the people who never go to Applebee's, they lose their fortunes, except for one who finagles his way into space.
And I don't remember, he knows science, actually.
I don't remember a single
character. So one is definitely Elon Musk. I mean, they have a
different name. Oh, yeah.
It's definitely Elon Musk.
This book loved Elon Musk, and it loved Neil deGrasse Tyson, which, like, it was, and Hillary Clinton. It was all over.
Well, I think it hated Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton in a good light. It definitely did not.
Well, no, you know who it painted in a really bad light? Chelsea Clinton, because it said she had Down syndrome. Because the Hillary Clinton woman was like, I had one child with Down syndrome. I'm like, oh my God, Neo, gloves are off. But it sucked Neil deGrasse Tyson's dick, which, give me a fucking break. That guy, does he do much real science anymore? I feel like he just argues with Terrence Howard now. Like he doesn't.
Pretty much.
Is he in the lab and he's like, I've discovered something in the Kuiper belt? No, he just like does another season of Cosmos. But this book made it sound like he was like, man, the moon exploded. Quick, I have I need a napkin to sketch out some equations. I think I've discovered something. And he's just really cool and really good at science. It was really all over his cock.
I think he's not really cool, but in the terms of this book, being hyper proficient at something that's, you know, technical is cool, but still, even in this dying earth, he's not that cool.
No, everyone like looks to everyone expected him to be cool. They're like, it's Doc Dubois, and he's like, oh, no,
he's a reputation for telling it like it is because he doesn't have any social tact because he's a scientist.
But he's a really cool Louisiana man who knows about science.
Say them rocks are gonna come down on us. Like a big bowl of gumbo.
But the gumball hard because it's old.
Going to turn the whole oceans into a big roux. You got to cook that roux low and slow about 5,000 years till you get down there.
It's going to be so tender.
You guys really hated this book, didn't you?
I actually liked the book.
It was whatever.
It's just really funny thinking of a 5,000-year cook, because some dumb motherfucker at a barbecue festival is like, no, this will be ready in 5,000 years.
The lowest and the slowest. You got to get that meat tender.
I'm cooking at it at 32. You mean 320? No.
Kelvin.
32. It'll be done. 5,000 years, yes.
My secrets are that and a little bit of paprika on it.
The finishing touch is the heat death of the universe.
It's a reverse sear.
Seals in the juice. I don't know anything about barbecue or science.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so an enormous number of things happen in this book. We got to go a little bit faster. Okay, so...
An enormous number of math problems.
Beginning of the book, you're meeting...
It's like a man leaves from New York on a train going at 56 miles an hour.
Okay, so it didn't actually have math problems in the book. It did describe the problems they were solving using a lot of math, but...
Yes.
It's not like a math textbook that actually had the math in it. Okay, so you're meeting the astronauts, most of which are women. That's going to be important. There's Dinah, who is their like robotics expert. There's Izzy, who is the leader of the ISS and the captain of the ISS
Ivy,
or whatever.
Izzy is the ISS.
Yeah,
Ivy
so
is the
it
leader.
Is in this future of 2015. International Space Station has been actually expanded, and it's been in. Different private companies have like started to like also use it because Dinah was there as part of the very beginnings of an asteroid mining expedition or asteroid mining like plan. She's still on the International Space Station, and there are so they're going to be some of the main characters in the book, kind of figuring it out. They're like, well, you guys are you ladies and the other people on the International Space Station, you're literally the only hope of humanity. We are going to, all the governments of the world are going to cooperate, which obviously a little bit of a stretch. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The thing is about
nuking all
the parts of the moon.
Thanks for your contribution, Bhutan.
The thing is about nuking all the parts of the moon. There are billions of them. They can't just nuke them all. There are just too many pieces.
A lot of the problem is that it's not going to be seven big pieces of rock that.
I
earth.
Know
it's going to be a billion tiny things that's going to like
that are still like yeah. the size of like Rhode Island, but it's going to be a billion of them. So,
well, it's not going to be a billion Rhode Islands, but it will be. No, I understand that won't actually work, but
they would try.
I feel like they would have been like, all right, we got to fucking figure out some other shit for the 8 billion people who were just like, good luck to keep them for 2 years. From not turning into Lord of the Flies. They'd have to like
yeah.
even lie. Just make up something. Oh, we're doing caves. Everyone's getting a cave. Like, just fucking lie to people. Like, how the fuck are you going to still get people to like file their taxes or to even just like not just shoplift? And like, how are you going to get that to stay in order when like the world's ending in 19
stay
months,
stay coming to their
suck
shift
my
at
dick
Rite
alternate
Aid.
Side parking. Like, it's ridiculous.
It's true. It's true. The book definitely glosses over that, and people are so the whole world is just united around this effort to launch as much stuff in space as they can to save it. Okay, so there's this plan where all the space agencies of the world are like building rockets as fast as they can and launching stuff up, and all the scientists and engineers are working on how they can put it together and build these space habitats and launch with not only food but with like self-sustaining, like, you know, grow algae that can produce oxygen, and then, you know, it's all this stuff. And then there's also a plan to send up every country in the world gets to select a certain number of people that they young people, because they're definitely going to be need to be young and healthy, to go up, and then eventually they will start repopulating the human race. And there's
so they want the genetic diversity. That'll be a thing. So they have people from all over the world in different groups. So it's not just, you know, like a space movie from 1978 where they only save white people.
Yes, and they send up hard drives full of, and they send up a lot of biological samples. Actually, they probably send up plenty of that too. But they send up biological samples of like embryos and a lot of, you know, in a lot of people's DNA, and they send up also a lot of hard drives with, you know, a lot of DNA sequences on them of a lot of life on Earth and stuff like that.
Isn't a DNA sequence like really long, like a fucking million trillion fucking characters, or is it not that actually long?
It depends
on the creature, I'm sure. But
yeah, so it is. It's like a human genome is like 3 million bases, like which is
not
a
in
lot.
Baseball terms, Nate. How many letters is that? How many ATGCs or whatever?
That's 3 million.
Pairs or single ones?
Pairs? Only one side kind of matters. It's because one side is always mirrored by the other side, which is why when you split it in half, it can copy it. And so really only one side contains the actual, you could say, contains the actual gene that actually codes for a protein. The other side is merely the mirror image that can be used to copy it. We're not going to get that. The book doesn't even go into that, and we're not even going to get into that now.
Sorry, kids studying for 9th grade biology class. All tall gnomes cry. That's how I remember those letters still.
And so, okay, first part of the book is like hopeful, and then, you know, and Doc Dubois and the president whose name is. Who's just called JBF and is the first woman president.
Flaherty or something like that.
Yeah.
Julia Flaherty.
Julia Flaherty, who's the first woman president, is like, tells Doc Dubois, you know what? You're an astrophysicist. We're going to need people like you. And you can be the one to like tell the, you know, still living humans on Earth what it's like up there. You can be our communicator. So, okay, fine.
You're going to be an excellent propaganda tool.
Yep. And then also, one thing that happens is the Elon Musk character, who owns a space company, like sends himself up to the International Space Station, and then is like, you know what? You guys have NASA. You've totally forgotten something. You're going to need a lot more water, and the water isn't just used for people to drink. It's actually used as rocket propellant. Because actually many rockets actually run on hydrogen and oxygen. We're going to need to get you a lot more water so you can have a lot more propellant, because you're going to need to lift this entire space station contraption, because it's going to be huge. It's going to be gigantic when it's done. Lift it much higher than the like 400 kilometer Earth orbit. You're going to need to get it higher than the moon. Just so it's safe and it doesn't just gets destroyed by all the billions of space rocks, or bolides, as they're called throughout the book. So he, on his own, like, builds his own rocket, and they go, the own rocket, his own, like, space station with a 4-gigawatt nuclear reactor on it, and they go out, they spend almost two years, going out to collect an asteroid that's mostly water. There happens to be one that's close enough, and then they, like, put rockets on it and sort of like bring
this
it
is like
back
halfway
to
through the book now, but yeah.
That's one of the things. So this is a plot line that's set up sort of near the beginning, where it's like, we're going to go and we're going to go and we're going to get this. And we're going to bring it to you.
But then they instantly lose radio contact with them. And they're like, who fucking cares? The Earth is about to die. And then you forget about them. And then he disappears for 200 pages of book. And you're like, oh yeah, that was a thing. Like Sean Probst. It's complicated. The guts trying to go through it in order is going to be hard, because there's the characters that are there from the very beginning, which are Ivy and Dinah are there from the very beginning, and the president lady, Julia Flaherty. And then other people get added, and Dr. Bois, and then other people get added throughout, or they're like there, but like not focused on, because eventually the first third of the book passes and they've gotten everybody they can into space. And it's like 1,500 people. It's like, wow, fucking epic fail, governments of the world, to save a lot of humans. That's a rounding error. That's nobody of the 8 billion people.
I guess the idea is that this is not a book that takes place yet in the future. So with our current technology, I don't think you could hope for any much. Even hoping for that would be insane. Even if you put everything towards it forever. So I guess he's trying to... Neal Stephenson's books are more of a thought experiment that he writes a plot around.
We want to get back to... I'm not sure what that thought experiment was.
What if the moon exploded right now?
I mean, if that's the thought experiment, that's ridiculous.
What do we do based on this? And like with our current technology, like if you made it take place 100 years in the future, then you can do a lot more made up shit. But this is like a let's get down to the nitty gritty details and not make up, a spaceship that can do whatever we want.
Sure, yeah, it's like a Star Wars spaceship where it just like takes off, like as if it's a fucking helicopter.
Yeah, this is like,
I get that.
If we had to do this right now, this is what it would take, and this is maybe how many, hopefully, people we could get up there if we were lucky.
Right, if complete government incompetence wasn't an issue.
But luckily, scientists saved the day.
It must have been nice, though, to be the people who are like, I'm going to die in 14 months. No, I'm not filing that fucking TPS report. you could go fuck yourself, Brenda. Oh, there's a mandated training in HR? Oh, is there? I have a mandated training for you and your mother. Who would ever still do certain jobs?
He didn't really focus on that part.
No, which is one of my major criticisms of the book. But Nate, help us get back on track.
All right, so part two is where essentially 2 years have passed. The Earth has sent up all the things that they possibly can, and what they call in the book is called the hard rain happens, which is when essentially pretty close to all at once is when all the major asteroids start falling down on Earth and everyone on Earth dies, and so the people in space are the only ones left.
It was a dramatic passage, I gotta say.
It was.
It was pretty badass.
And then part two, so now that they're alone up there, part two is where everything starts to go wrong. Many things.
You would think the Earth dying was that part, but no.
No, which is one thing kind of original about the book. Well, first, they can't, it's not, a lot of sci-fi is like, we need to save Earth. No, they don't save Earth. They don't even try to save Earth because they can't. They just try and save as many people as possible, which is not very many. And then... And then that's only a third of the way through the book. Earth is dead. And now what do we do? Even though they had all these plans and they... So things start to go wrong right away. Well, first is that the president, Julia Flattery, sends herself up to the International Space Station, even though she wasn't supposed to, because it's like the last 24 hours that Earth is even going to exist. She's like, fuck it, I'm ordering myself sent into space on the experimental space plane. But the other guy with him... dies from a
very convenient baby asteroid hits him.
Yeah. So in space, tiny little microscopic size asteroids are incredibly dangerous because even though they're tiny, they're moving at something like 11,000 miles an hour. And all the things in sort of near Earth orbit or orbiting at least 11,000 miles an hour. And if two things are going in the opposite direction, 11,000 miles an hour. That means they're headed towards each other at 22,000 miles per hour. So even a tiny little pebble, even a fleck of paint that came off of like a rocket, is incredibly dangerous.
Space sucks.
Good thing we've done a very good job of cleaning up the Earth's orbit of debris. And
oh yeah,
pieces of shit over the
that
last
is our garbage
years.
Shield in case aliens shows up. They'll never make it through.
That planet's abandoned. It's just squatters live there now.
We are the equivalent of like the house on the block that's got like a bathtub in the front lawn.
Yeah, it's got a car on
the block. Car being down Mars' property the value.
It's got an International Space Station up on cinder blocks, just like,
Isn't that what Mir is now? What happened to Mir?
It already came down many years ago.
Just missed it.
Yep. Merely.
I feel like we were in middle school for that.
So a lot of things go wrong. First, the president sends herself up, and then, but... And she's then starts she's making Hillary a lot Clinton. Of trouble. Yeah, it is basically Hillary Clinton. But then she makes a lot of trouble because she wants to be in charge. And so she like convinces people that she should be in charge because she's used to being president. But
she printed out the seal of the White House on a piece of like copy paper and hangs it wherever she goes. She's an asshole. She really sucks.
Yep. She does a lot. She's one of the main antagonists of the book, besides the parts of the moon that are going to kill everyone.
The antagonists are the moon and the president.
This is a libertarian novel. I can see it now.
The president is worse than the incoming moon. I bet the moon values gold standards.
She's trying to impose moon tax. How dare you? I want raw moon.
So because the president isn't a scientist or engineer, she's fucking useless. So she also brings a gun with her. She takes the gun of the security guard that came up with her. Anyway, so she's there, immediately starts making trouble. Also, at the same time, a meteor strike takes out almost all of the genetic archive. It's just gone.
Oh, yeah, like instantly like a thing destroys. And like, which one was that? And they're like, oh, no, my space cum. And then everybody's just like, oh, fuck.
97% of the genetic storage data.
They're
instantly gone.
For the last 2 years, they had been, this is maybe the closest he gets to explaining how they kept people occupied. They'd been asking every guy to just jerk off into a test tube. And the guy's like, oh, for Earth. And there's this jacket. They gave them all Pornhub premium accounts. just keep that cum coming. This is to save humanity. And then the space cum is destroyed instantly.
Yep. So on the space station, now with about 1,500 people, about like 200 are like serious scientists and engineers. And then the other 1,200 or so are just the young people that were just sent up given minimal training. It was like, well, you're going. Have fun. Thanks for saving the human race. Are just sent up. And they're kind of have nothing to do. And they're living in these like tiny, cramped little like space pods with nowhere to go. And everyone they know has just died. Like everyone, they're all their families. And so quickly a rift occurs where Julia, the president, sort of like through the internet, because you can't really like go back and forth between space pods very easily because it's very difficult to do. And so basically through space Facebook or Spacebook. Is actually called Spacebook.
Yeah. But MySpace, it was there the whole time.
It was right there. Yeah.
Tom is one of the people on the arc. He's in everyone's top eight. Could have done MySpace.
So in Spacebook, the president kind of convinced everyone that, oh, we don't really like the way this place is being run. And so the president convinces everybody to follow her, even though she's not a scientist and doesn't know what the fuck she's doing. And convinces like 800 of them, a lot
like
more than like two-thirds, like two-thirds or more, like or three-quarters of all the people left in the universe to break off from the space station and go to a higher orbit because they think it's going to be safer and to eventually jet off to Mars and start a Mars colony. And she's like, we don't like this plan. We want to start a Mars colony. And the scientists are like, are you fucking crazy? That's not going to work. You can't do that's just it's just not. And she's like, no, we demand our voices are heard. And then they go and then they split off. And so most of humanity or like three quarters of humanity like goes off to this thing. And they're sort of just like an enemy pod. They're like an enemy force that and.
And this is where all the other people are like, this is why we had the Electoral College. It was to keep her from
we never should have allowed the direct election of senators.
This was a terrible thing. She should have campaigned in Michigan.
Should have gone to Wisconsin. Yeah. So a couple of years pass sort of quickly in the book where like like they're trying to figure it out, and then things are not going that well, and people are dying from accidents and, you know, from bolide strikes, you know, and also people are getting cancer.
Well, that's not until they bring back the space nuclear reactor comet.
Yeah. So, okay, not long after the hard rain, Dinah starts getting these, starts getting some Morse code signals, because one of the things about her in the book is she does like Morse code with her dad down in Alaska, who's a miner. That's going to be important. And she's getting this thing. It's like, what is that? And it's actually the one almost working radio on the space expedition to go get the water comet and bring it back. There, she's finally getting some signals. It's because it's actually getting much closer. So the people on the ISS send out like, also, the commander sent. They all go out to the other spaceship with the water comet just to see what's happening and what's going on. And they get there, and everyone is dead. It's been sound, and like they're able to reconstruct from people's logs about what's really going on, and it did not go well. Though they did manage to capture the ice comet and then bring it back, but there was a leak in the nuclear reactor. And so everyone, well, at first, like the radio broke. They didn't have a replacement part, which was just poor planning, but they had to do it in a rush. Since it was like took a year and a half to get out to the ice comet, people just had to like sit and not move and watch DVDs all day to conserve oxygen and food and stuff like that. And so they were, mental health did not, was, it definitely suffered. And then there was a leak in the nuclear reactor, and so people started just dying. So we're getting huge radiation doses, especially because like a little particle of highly radioactive, a tiny microscopic particles were escaping from the reactor, and they didn't know. And so people were getting cancer and dying.
I never thought of like radioactive stuff as like a physical little thing, like that you could eat and have your insides be radioactive.
Yeah, because they very quickly ascertained that Sean Probst, quote, died from bleeding to death out of his asshole.
Yes, yeah. Because he ate
ate some radiation, and he's like, he's going to be Spider-Man now, right? And I'm like, no, that's not how it really works.
I guess,
and
I never really thought of it as like a distinct, I know it's a physical thing, but like a distinctly physical chunk of radiation.
So it's a chunk of atoms that are highly radioactive, but it's so small.
Seven
like even
atoms?
It's essentially it's the size of a piece of dust. And the thing is about radioactivity is you as a person cannot feel radioactivity. You have absolutely no capacity to feel something that's highly radioactive. Even if you're like holding it, you're just never going to know without a Geiger counter. And so when it's like the dust becomes radioactive and you breathe it in and then it gets lodged in your lungs, like that's kind of one of the most dangerous things. Or when it's in your food and it gets lodged in your stomach or in your intestines, then it's like highly radioactive and just like key, and it's just kicking out these radioactive particles like alpha particles and beta particles and neutrons and stuff like that. And that is going to give you radiation poisoning and or cancer very quickly. Now, which happened around Chernobyl and around Fukushima. Like there were, like especially around Chernobyl, because there was a giant explosion of the radioactive core. So that is why Chernobyl cannot be inhabited for another 10,000 years.
It didn't want to go there anyway.
But when the guy ate this and bled to death out of his asshole, are we sure he didn't also have Applebee's, though?
It's because all of the provisions came from Applebee's.
I didn't know that the space chicken quesadilla was radioactive.
They all had diarrhea, and they, along with not packing an extra radio, they didn't pack a space plunger. And the toilet backed up, and they all got radiation cholera from the
Toxic Avenger came for them. All right, Nate, we'll be good.
But they managed, so okay, everyone on the expedition to get the ice comet, they're dead, but
they managed to like put the gas pedal down with a brick back towards Earth.
Well, that's the thing about space is you don't actually need to keep accelerating once you get out into space. As long as you have a bunch of speed, you're just going to keep going. It is the...
Until some greedy planet grabs you and is like, you are my moon now, which was a big thing in this. It just took so fucking long for them to capture back this comet ship.
Yeah, oh, it did. And there's all this stuff about... Oh, so, okay. They're riding a giant comet with like millions of tons of water, but and it's headed back towards Earth. But the problem is Earth's atmosphere is actually a lot bigger now because when gases warm up, they actually expand. And so it's when it comes in towards Earth, it's actually going to hit the atmosphere and then it's going to just plunge into the Earth and they won't actually be able to use any of that water. It will all just be gone. All the effort will be for nothing.
But couldn't it cool down the Earth with this big ice ball? And then you'd be ready to go there again.
We later like in part three, 47 hours later, you will learn that is they have to do it multiple times to cool down the Earth and make an ocean again.
Yes. But at this point, what they do is they take what little rockets they have and what the robots, that Dinah's robots, and they reshape it, and then they use the nuclear reactor core to like split water, and then they have this whole thing where they are able to adjust the incoming, you know, megaton asteroid's orbit just enough so that it swings around the planet, but it doesn't quite swing around enough, and so they have to do some like really emergency maneuvers.
Emergency math.
And Marcus dies. I do a lot of math. I do a ton of math.
Marcus dies in several once.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned once, but it's actually sent up to be the leader of humanity. He's
because
leader.
Humanity didn't want subtly
a woman. Yeah,
a woman running everything.
But they wanted someone also who would not piss off the major world power. So they picked the Swiss guy, and he was like, "Oh yes."
Which can I bring a bunch of gold I have with me?
I have some paintings my family's held in a vault. We just have them. I don't know. They might be worth something.
They got them. They've been in the family for decades.
Since like 1943, about. I don't know when we got them. Sorry. So they do this weird game where they capture a comet. And in the process, just characters are just being introduced and killed. Everyone's taken, and then like random guy from this country shows up and he's like, I learned how to, and they're like, great, you get in there, and then he dies instantly. Like it kill off everybody. But they capture and they burn off like 97% of the comet's water in the process or something like that.
In the process of bringing it back and slowing down.
But that's enough.
Almost all of it. But there's still a shitload of it because it's a fucking comet. And almost everyone's dead.
Yeah.
It turns out you don't need
thirsty
as much water
anymore.
So they managed to get the water, even though a bunch of people died, in order to get it to them. But they're going to need it because they're going to need it to as rocket fuel so that all the pods can actually lift up. So they can actually point all the pods down towards the Earth and go into a much, much higher orbit and hopefully an orbit that as far away as the moon was or the moon used to be, which takes an enormous amount of propellant.
One of the scientists on the ship from the beginning is conveniently like some sort of like biologist her work was all about schooling fish and like swarms of birds or what the fuck those are called. Flocks, that's word. And she's like, they're like, you can use your fucking skills to work with the, you know, the AIs that are using the little space pods so that when little rocks come, everyone can kind of like move out of the way real quick and then go back into formation like a swarm would. So we'll use that. So all these little pods are individually poofing air and water to jet around all the time.
And there was like a meteor they had captured earlier on, like before the book even started or something that they were using.
Yeah, that's what
like
all the little robots were working on,
a gravity
to mine it.
Thing.
Yeah.
And then the perambulator, or whatever it was called, the perambulator, I don't know, the AI that keeps them from...
The AI had so many parameters that they just called the program a perambulator. It is the program that would move all the pods out of the way when a big asteroid was coming through.
And then they introduce all these other characters are put on, and you kind of lose track of them, or at least I did.
And the space sociologist. Only non-hard science character that matters.
Yeah, she was the one who picked the easiest major. I wrote my thesis on Hoop Dreams, the 1994 documentary. And there's the woman who's just so happens to be really good with, you know, gene shit and reproducing dead species. And then there's the Russian woman who would be the villain in a female reboot of Rocky, Tekla.
Yes. Rockette.
Yeah. Yes. Must have been love, but it's over now. Is that Rockette? Is that who does that song? Oh, that's, Roxette, sorry.
That's Roxette, yeah.
That's Roxette.
She's like, you know what? If you saw her, the narrator, or you know, the omniscient narrator of this book was like, if you saw her, you definitely think she was a lesbian. But that'd be wrong to think. But actually, she was a lesbian. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, because in socialist, you know, communist Russia, you take whatever you can get. And she was all about any genitals she can get. And she was like a bronze medalist in volleyball or something. She was an Olympian.
Yeah, some kind of sport.
And she looked like a Russian propaganda woman, you know, just steely-eyed and blonde and
Delphine Lundgren.
And spent most of her time catching moose and squirrel throughout the first part of the book. I lose track of what happened when, Nate. Please help us.
So a bunch of time goes by, and most people are dead. On the International Space Station, we've got two groups at this point. We've got the sort of International Space Station part, which is still expanded, but that had like a few hundred people, which are really all the scientists. And then you've got all the Arkies, which are the young adults, the kids that were sent up to like repopulate the human race that went off to the higher orbit, and then they no longer like talk to each other anymore. And then things keep getting worse. Doc Dubois, at this point, he has a lot of people have died from cancer or from suicide because it's like so grim and so bleak and so enclosed. Doc Dubois has cancer and is definitely dying, but they're just getting everything together so that they can do what Doc Dubois calls the big lift, which is getting everybody up to the orbit of the moon. The what?
Isn't the big ride?
The big ride. That sounds better.
That's also what he calls. He tells all the lonely women on the ship. In college, they called me Cock Dubois.
I'm going to go Mufalada diving.
Girl, that pussy dumb dad smell like crawfish. You're going to want to watch that. Bayou, that is not fresh. Nate, do you want to do just one? It's really fun.
No, I don't. So, just when they're just about ready to do the big lift, they get a radio message from the other group of people that have been in a higher orbit, and then it's instead of Julia, the president,
where they like start each message with a MIDI of "Hail to the Chief" because she's still trying to pretend she's president.
The paper with her seal on it is increasingly ripped. And it's clearly been crumpled up and smoothed out several times.
It's really sad. Like, and she has like this guy who's her, you know, press secretary or somebody like that, who's just an ass kisser following around all the time. Or is that the guy that died on the ship? He was in the beginning of the
book. She finds another one.
She gets another kiss ass. And he's like, you never know. The America was a pretty big deal before.
They get America again.
So they get a radio message like, we want to talk. And so they talk, and it's instead of Julia, the president, it's this other young woman you've never met before in the book named Aida. And she's like, we would like to rejoin you. And so on the International Space Station crew, they're like, okay, well, we got a plan for how many are there? How many are left? And she's like, 11.
And one's about to die.
One more, yeah.
Or it's 11 plus...
11 plus one. So they're talking like, wait, so you took 1,000 people with you, and there are 11 still alive? Like, what happened? Well, the food production crashed because we didn't have enough water, and so people starved. And so how did you survive? We ate them. And so the 11 people who are left, they're cannibals. But they're like, we would like to rejoin you. And Ivy, who's now in command, is like, well, that sucks for them, but it's not like we haven't considered it. And it's a third of the remaining human race. We're going to let them rejoin us. Like, okay.
We're going to have a very awkward social justice circle where we have a talking stick and we talk about eating each other and our feelings, but we're going to work it out.
But yet they have to, like, the orbits align at just at the right time of the big, when they're about to do the big lift. But yet at the same time, there's also a solar flare. There's a coronal mass ejection, also known as a solar flare, that is at the time when they need to do it, which is make everything difficult. But they decide to go through with it anyway. But when they get there, the other people, they come in to take over. They come in with weapons, and they're literally just trying to take over the entire thing, but they're able to fight them off. But the ISS crew, they're able to fight them off, even though a bunch of people die.
Again.
And so, yeah, a bunch of people die, but all the only people that, like, live through the fight, of the 11, the only people that live through the fight are Aida and Julia, the president. When they bring in Julia, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's like the fucking road.
It is, yeah.
Because
this part is like the road.
It was crazy, and I was when I found out there were cannibals, I was like, I fucking hope they ate her first. Oh, I hope they ate her so much with that hot sauce Hillary claimed to bring in her fucking purse everywhere. But no, she lives somehow because she's a lizard person, and then at a certain point, which doesn't happen in the book, but they were like, you need to shut the fuck up forever. So they pull her tongue out of her mouth, like, yank it out. So it's like still attached, but they pull it out and pierce it with a bolt so big she can't pull it back into her mouth. And she can't speak. Like, holy shit, that is some bone tomahawk. What is that fucking horrible movie was? Violence. Did you see that movie, Jimmy? You've probably seen that. With Kurt Russell, where they cut the dude in half. It's fucking
it sounds
horrifying.
Familiar. I don't know.
They pierce her tongue so she can't even talk, and she can't even pull it into her mouth anymore. It's like the ultimate shut the fuck up move. It was my favorite part of the book, honestly, because you're meant to hate her so much.
Oh yeah.
So there's so this part of the book, which is like the climax of part two, is like really really intense because they're like trying to do the big lift at the same time as the solar flare, at the same time as they're being attacked, and they're just like, well, we've got to go out and defend, you know, some you stay here, you go out, and they're trying to defend at the same time, and then, but the people on the on Izzy, they managed to win, even though a bunch of people die, and so now a bunch of people die, and the people who took place in the, took part in the fight during the solar flare, they're all going to die of radiation poisoning because they weren't in their little, like, radiation secure pods, but they managed to do it, and they managed to get the International Space Station up to the orbit of the old moon, and they put it into what they call Cleft, which is the largest remaining chunk of the moon, which has a little, like, valley in it, though this thing is still gigantic, but it has a little valley in it where they can shelter everything from, you know, all of the space debris and a lot of the radiation.
Dubois. It's pronounced Dubois. Mm-hmm.
The debris. Well, Dr. Dubois, this is where he dies. They bring him out because he's an astrophysicist, and they bring him out to literally walk on the moon, walk on the asteroid, the biggest chunk of the moon that still survives. And he goes out and he walks, and then, but he knows he's dying, so he dies. I mean, he dies right then, and they bury him on the moon. And then there are only eight people left. There are all women, one of which is too old to have children. So now there are seven people left that can have children, and they're going to go on and repopulate the human race, which is where the title of this book came from.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I get it. But they made it there. They made it to the moon, right? Couldn't you say after 700 fucking pages, it's about 600 pages actually, this was Earth's crowning achievement? Kind of was.
in a way.
Well, it kind of was, yeah.
Yeah, what we wanted. This is, I think we've had this before, or maybe we've definitely talked about it. I don't know where we drank it before. This crowning achievement from Barriere, which is an imperial stout brewed with bourbon barrel aged maple syrup, which I'm going to say is kind of a waste of the good maple syrup. That's a delicate flavor you're not going to notice in the product, but it's very good. And, you know, perfect thing for when we're recording this fucking late July day, a 12% alcohol maple syrup beer.
Yeah. Keeps you cool.
So they get to the moon. Oh, it's so left.
This final part of part two, there are 8 women, but only 7 of them can have children. And luckily, Moira, the geneticist, still alive. And so they have a meeting and they're like, well, we have to start repopulating the Earth, and we don't have any. First, we're just gonna. There's a way we can just basically clone you, and you will bear children, but those children will be your more or less your clones. But then we can start to do this recombination, so we can start to eliminate the problems that causes, and then we can eventually, through enough time and enough technology, we can reprint some new genomes, and we can start mixes. There won't be just a complete inbreeding, so we can fix that. And I can, through time, recreate a Y chromosome so we can start having male babies as well, and then they can start having children. Like, we can do it. But yet, all the women, they, like, can't agree on what they want to do. Now, Aida, she survives. She was the leader of the cannibals, and she's like, you guys are going to hate me for the rest of your life. All of my children will have the mark on them. You will. And she's like, your descendants will throw rocks at my descendants. And we were going to create 7 races. We're clearly going to create 7 new human races that will not get along with each other. And you're especially going to look down on me, on my descendants.
Because they have decided, they decided not to just, like, you know, have a bunch of kids, but, like, we've had the technology now in this world to edit out, you know, genetic bad things like diseases or, like, you know, abnormalities that are bad for humans. But they're also like, we can also just, like, make them smarter or make them stronger. And we're like, should we do that? I don't know. And some people are like, yes, let's absolutely do that because we have to do this to survive. And Aida's like, that's fucked up. We shouldn't be doing this. And they're like, nope, we got to do it. And she's a feisty Italian. So they're all like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to remember, but each of these women is from a very different part of the world.
Oh, one of them is Malala. She's one of the survivors. Yes, Malala. It's actually Malala.
Lesbian
has a different
Malala.
Name in the book.
Kamala or something, right?
Camilla. Yeah.
Camilla, yeah.
I tried to do the audiobook. I ended up reading the physical book. It's not ever spelled out, but she's from, like,
the Middle East.
Yeah.
She's from Astan.
They're like, you know, he changes, like, just enough letters. Like, it was the Malatan tried to kill her in Makastan. She's basically Malala. But you have a Chinese woman. Ivy is Chinese. You have, because she's Ivy Shao. You forget that. And the whole time, you know that some of those white ladies are like, but what's your real name? Then there's there's a black woman who's Moira, or at least she presents as black.
English?
Or, like, that's what they're gonna...
She's like English, but she is black.
Yeah. Well, she's like, oh, yeah, back in Manchester, governor, bruv. Yeah, no, like,
she was like Caribbean, so she would, like, switch to Caribbean accents. They're like, oh
yeah, that's like, yeah. What do you think she said? Mino. Okay, so anyway, then there's
this is a sequel. This is a prequel to Necronomicon. She is the progenitor of all space Jamaicans.
What the fuck was that? I want to say it's not Necronomicon. Neuromancer,
whatever. Yeah, yeah. Same shit.
She starts the space Jamaicans. Yeah, like, Mino, go on, you're no space station. Bring now down the current goat. Like, what do you say? Then there's like an Arab woman. There's the Russian, because that's a different
race. The
Russian
who is immediately about, like, let's get racist about this. Some races are just better than others.
I love that. You know what I really love about this book is that when you everyone's like, the future is female. It's like, all right, let's let seven women pick the future. And they're like, let's invent racism again. This is the first thing they do. Like, fuck that bitch. And they make racism. And then all the white women are like, Italians aren't white.
Some like 1910s racism.
She's like, you know, she's not Jamaican. She's like, a bibbity, but you're not going to want my children to like your children.
You're not going to like my bambinos.
And they're like, it's true. It's fucking, your kids are going to smell like garlic, Aida. Like, it's just not our fault. Listen, if we need people to work in the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, we'll get your little bambinos. Otherwise, shut the fuck up. And then she puts a curse on them.
Yeah, she does the evil eye.
She does the horns. You know she does it.
I don't know what the Italian version of Malacca is, but
she's like, Marta!
Ming!
Oh, dude, totally.
And she makes, like, her children, she doesn't just stop at one, like, sub-race of humanity. She's like, I'm going to make a bunch of them.
They're starting as Italians, Jimmy.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to make a bunch of them, and they're all just going to be to, like, counter whatever ones you make, because I'm a spiteful bitch.
So all of her spawn have Italian names. There's, like, the Brajoles and the Manicots and the Mozzarelles. Who else? Yeah, is that all of them? And then, of course, fucking Hillary Clinton gets to have a kid.
She makes a race of con artists and spies.
And they just finagle their way into anything.
And they have big eyes.
Yeah, they have, all the better to see you with. And also, we never mentioned in the beginning, two of these women had, well, one of them.
Ivy.
Which one had her dad live in Alaska? Was that Dinah?
Dinah, yeah.
And Ivy had a submarine boyfriend that everyone was like, that's fucking, you're lying. She's like, no, he's a real, he's my boyfriend. I met him on the internet. And he lives
in Canada on a submarine.
I can't tell you where it is. It's government secret. They're like, oh, sure, Ivy. That's in the background. We're supposed to have forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the seven women make racism again. Instantly.
So that's the end of part two.
No Spanish woman. Because they have all the races. But of the seven races, three are white people. It's the math is odd.
That's, you know, the future. But is that the future
for our children where they have... Wait, what's
seven
the 14
women,
words?
14 words, yeah.
Okay, so that was part two. And then it jumps to part three, 5,000 years later.
And if at this point you're thinking, does this book have any intention of ending soon? It doesn't.
It does not. I had forgotten everything about this third part. I remember it existed, and I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's the future. But I forgot everything that happens because it's all dumb. And
could have been a great epilogue, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Instead, it was a third of the book. It really was.
Just so much.
Because, it was so much. But also, okay, so it's 5,000 years later. And you get gradually reintroduced to, the different races. And, one is, first it's just a surveyor on the new Earth that they're, that the people in space have started to terraform. There are now some, they've seeded it with, first bacteria that created oxygen and all this stuff. And so they've sort of started a biome, and there's some plants and animals. And a few people have started to live there, although most people still just live in space through, these giant ring of space stations. 3 billion people live on these.
They're mostly settlers who are like, this has been our land since the beginning. And they kick off the Palestinians who are on that land. No? I thought you didn't even like that joke. Because they're the people who came when they weren't supposed to settle. And everyone's like, what are we going to do about them?
Just get rid of them.
But then they're like, this is our land. It's been our land. And you're like, I don't know who got here first. Never mind. Got it all out. It's fine.
Well, they've already at this point in the future, had a war that's basically communism versus capitalism. Not in terms of economic systems, but just in terms of red versus blue and the big iron wall or whatever, and they, you know, have strict boundaries about where they have property and their spheres of influence.
Yeah, there's a new Cold War between like two of the factions. And there you get introduced to all the different races, where each race is like, you know, distinct in a number of different ways. And like the Moirans have this like epigenetic thing where you become a new person, which was really dumb.
By taking a nap, Nate.
They're supposed to be like hyper adaptable so that they can, you know, change according to the situation they're in so they can get things done, whatever is needed. But it does end up erasing the old person, and they just get the same person's name with a number after it.
They're like Swiss Army knife people.
Yeah, except they don't like turn back. They just, that person's gone.
And then the Teclans are, you know, huge and muscular and good at combat. And then each race has a bunch of other things, which I didn't bother to keep track of.
Well, the only other thing that was interesting, I thought, was that the Italian created Neanderthals again.
Out of spite.
Like, yeah. Yeah. she spent a lot of time. They revealed.
She was also, she was the youngest one. So she had the most time to make babies. So she had a lot of different babies.
I got to say that the whole thing about, you know, they're making the space babies on the moon, for a guy who went into all the detail of like that, he couldn't just plug in the blender because the plug had not the right polarity. And we had to go through every fucking detail about how that worked. And he's like, turning on the light released an onslaught of electrons. Electrons are a particle. Like, oh my God, just fucking get to what happens. Having space babies is probably fucking hard and a really complicated scientific problem.
Neil Stephenson is definitely a math and physics guy and not a biology guy.
As my wife is about to have another kid, having kids is not fucking simple on a physical level on Earth. Doing in vitro fertilization on the moon, I know, it is really complicated. Yeah. And he's like, never once, like they never once mention the shipload of fucking ridiculous shots women have to take to implant an embryo.
Also, he's I don't remember, but I don't think any of the women are medical doctors.
No, they just
have one's a geneticist, knowledge. But
it is IVF is really. It's this is not to say it's bad, but like
it's complicated.
It's unsuccessful a lot of the time. It is a lot of unsuccessful attempts at every stage of that process of getting an egg, fertilizing an egg, implanting an egg, getting a baby. He means like, yeah, they just decided to have babies. And they're like, I want my baby's head to be round. And they're like, that's done. We have CRISPR to do that for us. But it's in space, so it's weird. It's Crispin Glover. And then they have their fucking space babies. He goes through the detail of every other technological thing. And he's just like, I bet those ladies figured it out. I don't need to tell you about anything about that. I found that ridiculous in this book.
But it's so they could do space racism. So it was for a good cause.
Oh, that's true. Space racism is key. I like that. I'm all about that space racism. The final frontier.
Racism in space.
So after it being introduced to all the different races and the conflicts that they have and the ones that get along and the ones that don't, you get this thing where there's a meeting of the seven where they put to, where the old... One old scientist guy who puts together an expedition of
whose name
of
is
each race.
Who knows?
Yeah,
they're like, why are you meeting Doctor Who Knows? It's like there was a legend of who was on first. I think named for
also
him.
Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, but Doctor Who no. It's terrible.
So they go to this expedition down to Earth, and because like some weird stuff's been happening, and they go to find, they find an artifact, which is a truck, but that is from literally old Earth, but it's suddenly disappeared, and like, where'd it go? And so what you find out is people who had survived down in mines for 5,000 years have
Dinah's cousins, essentially, her dad's kin,
had been eating like basically nothing but mushrooms and for 5,000 years. And there's stuff about how they survived when they're like, and then so one of them is kidnapped and there's a space thing. And
it's a very new world, old world kind of thing. Like they meet and they're like, well, this is our land, and they do a land acknowledgement or something. And then the other people come in and they fight, and there's a miscommunication, and it was
dumb. And then they're like, oh, we need to talk to the pingers. It's like, who are the pingers?
And a unique racial slur.
It ends with the pingers, which is a third race of sea peoples that survived under the sea for 5,000 years.
Were the diggers.
Right, were so the diggers, yeah.
Way worse.
Oh, yeah, diggers.
And they're like, we must speak to the pingers. Digger, please. And they're like, oh, my God, what is that?
Also, the diggers look like regular old-timey humans, but the sea people are now
otter
fat
men.
Manatee people that talk like, burp, 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 burp.
Oh, the humanity.
So they were introduced in like the last 5 pages of this giant book.
They have no penises.
No, they did have penises. They were under their fat folds.
They're Americans.
It's yeah.
They're Walmart people.
So there's a bunch of conflict in this third part, which is really dumb, and I'm not even going to explain, but you meet the pingers in like the last 5 pages, and you learn a little bit about them. I have a feeling at this point, Neal Stephenson was just like, you know what? This is enough. I don't even want to bother going into... And there's one thing, it's like, oh... There's a lore that there was a second project in addition to... This is like the last page of this giant fucking book. There was in addition to the space project of bringing everybody up into space before the hard rain, there also was a second project to bring to, you know, to start a colony on the ocean floor or something like that.
Yeah, well, store all of the cum in the ocean. The semen?
Yes. Darling, exactly. It's better down where it's wetter.
Go to Ocean City, Maryland.
And then, like other Neal Stephenson books, it just kind of ends.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't just... The last conversation is kind of important, because...
Is he setting up 8 Eves?
There's a character, the guy who finds the artifact, which they call a fact, and his name is Einstein. And he's a... He's a sooner, which, I mean, there's so many things.
He's a person that lives, he's like a settler. He's someone that moved down to the Earth's surface before it was, like, technically okay.
Yeah, they're like, I've had enough space life. And then they come to Earth. It's been 4,900 years, dude. Chill out.
But he's a young, horny boy.
He's very, very horny.
Yeah.
But he is talking to this other character who I freaking forgot his name. It was like Taklamakan or something like that.
And you're talking about tax law?
No, not tax law. Sonar tax law.
Sonar tax law. Real character name.
Ty Wanon.
Oh, Ty, who's the space bartender?
The space bartender, yeah.
Slash government agent.
Well, yeah, but he also works for like a deep cover bar where there are people there who work for the purpose, TM. And he's like, what is the purpose? And the guy's like, fuck if I know. The end. But, well, he actually says, you know, the purpose, he goes on a little bit more. It's like, the purpose is, why are we here? What is this for? What are we trying to preserve? And in the past, religion did that. But religion is stupid.
Now we have space racism.
But people were kind of better when we had religion. Okay, bye. And then it ends. That's how it ends. The whole... I'm going to tell you, this book troubled me. Because I'm not religious. And I was like, well, you know, most of my decisions are made, and I think most people's decisions are made with, like, thinking about posterity or, like, the future or your children or something like that. If that doesn't exist, what's the point? Right? Because you could have, like, there's no God, all right, whatever. But my kids will live in this world, or my grandchildren. But if they say, no, they're not, that's not going to happen either. And well, the fuck, why does any of it matter? Right? It's really hard. I couldn't think of a good answer. And I thought he was going to offer one, but no. He just gets to the end of the book and he goes like, good question. The end. I was so fucking angry when this ended. Nate, you smirk.
Oh, so this was at the end. I got to this part at the end of an 8-hour flight yesterday, and I was like, fuck it, thank God it's over. I didn't even think about any of those things. I probably wasn't even listening. I was watching the person in front of me was watching on the TV at the same time, watching on their headrest. So yeah, this third part of the book, I feel like part of it is what he wanted to write, or more like he had the thought experiment of what if, you know, because he called it Seven Eves, what if we have this thing where only seven women survive and they have to repopulate all of the human race? That's like, that was his thought experiment. But then he wrote the first part about how you get there. Then it was like, oh, okay, that's already a lot of book. I mean, and Cryptonomicon was like 1,000 pages, so he could have gone on for more, but he was still like, I don't really have a good story for this second part, so I'm just going for this third part. I mean, I'm just going to include it, but it's not as good. And then he's like, fuck it, whatever.
It's really where it gets into all the like cool future tech and like wing glider suits and the big belts that goes around Earth and the big space dick city that travels around the Earth belt and plants itself across the equator and blah blah blah, and like, oh, what interesting, cool, futuristic ideas. But
and they've the plot rediscovered the formula for Tang
and still no one likes it.
This from the lore, we have resurrected Tang.
Her name was Sonar Taxlaw because the underground people have memorized the someone, luckily. There was a traveling salesman who came up to the door of the mine and sold him a set of encyclopedias.
The last one, like, the world's ending in 8.5 weeks, but...
And Carta's not going to work down there, guys.
You don't want to end it dumb.
But I work on commission, so you guys just buy one more. I got to make my sales numbers.
That was, I mean, it was kind of funny, actually. It reminded me of The Postman. You ever see that movie with Kevin Costner?
Yes, parts of it. It's 9 hours long.
It's actually a book. First. But anyway, there's a character who's a psych, short for encyclopedia, who has, you know, memorized her one volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And so every once in a while, somebody will say something like, this is just like, you know, is that where Singapore was? And she'll be like, Singapore, city in Asia, member population 3.2 million, whatever the fuck it was. It was kind of funny, actually. It was pretty funny.
But not worth another 200 pages.
I think my Goodreads review summarizes it pretty well. This was a pretty decent 3.5 books. Because I actually don't really even understand how he divided the sections, because the first and second sections aren't quite...
Yeah, the destruction of Earth happens like part way through part two.
That should have been the end of part one. Absolutely, that's the end. Like, oh my, holy fuck, what happens next? Cliffhanger. And apparently this was also optioned for a film. That would be the worst movie ever made.
Everything is optioned for a film these days.
But it would be as I was reading it, I was thinking this would make a pretty good series, like a season or two long kind of thing. Because there's a bunch of adventures, you know, go get the ice comet, go on the big ride, go rendezvous with the other ship. Each of those could be its own 45-minute little episode. But it was just too many things in one book. It should have been a series. It could have been restructured in a way more, like, introduction, escalating, whatever, action, you know, whatever the fuck the right language is from ELA class, I don't remember. Climax, solution, ending, chat's chapter one or episode one or whatever it is. It was really erratic.
I think if it was any other sci-fi writer than Neal Stephenson, this would have been a book series. Parts one and two would have been, you know, book one, and part three would have been a separate book, and it would have kept going from there. You're like, I hate those ones, whatever. But Stephenson doesn't really do series, really, I don't think.
He did a Baruch did do a series. It's like the powdered wig journals. I don't know what it's called, but it's Baroque historical fiction.
That sounds fucking awful. But I mean, the amount of time spent. I liked the book overall. I thought part three was kind of silly, but I like his stuff. He's got a lot of cool ideas. My issue is always with him is there's way more technical shit than is necessary. And sometimes like he spent the same amount of time describing the death of the planet Earth as he did executing a turn in space by a ship.
Way it's more true. Time on the turn in space.
I mean one individual turn. He did it many times.
Oh, okay.
There were many times that something turned.
That's because he's a misanthrope who doesn't like Earth.
Well, he can't not dive into some weird little technical thing that you've never thought of. And it's like, that's an interesting thought, but like it really breaks up the flow. Whereas like talking about how everyone just died, everyone's kind of bummed because everyone's dead. And it's like, you know, he was sitting in the room being sad, looking at a big projector. By the way, he looked at a projector because no one knows how to use the optic grinder, so no one can make glasses anymore. So he's got to read everything big because there aren't any optometrists in space, and this is how you make glasses. It's like, dude, no.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that. Yeah.
There's a really fucking hysterical review for this on Goodreads. It has, like, hundreds of likes, but it's really funny, like, just this one sentence. And when the best thinkers on Earth, it's framed as Neal Stephenson's pitch to his publishers. And when the best thinkers on Earth deduce that they are going to be smashed to smithereens, parentheses, always wonder where that word came from, perhaps from the Irish, smiradini. they team up to get a large group of humans off the Earth and colonize in space orbit around Earth in 2 years that they have, before the great rain of particles reaches its most destructive phase. It's like he can't say any interesting idea or word or concept. And I'm going, let me tell you a little bit about that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the worst elements of Encarta and that fucking Microsoft paperclip. Like they did the fusion dance. Yeah.
It's like he put footnotes into the body.
He invented body notes.
So, okay. I liked it. Because I find how people figure out weird stuff to be interesting, even though it's fictional, you know, but like how stuff works is interesting to me and how people figure out weird problems is interesting to me. So I don't mind a lot of technical detail. Plus, the science stuff wasn't all new to me. I mean, sure, a lot of it was, but I had enough background to understand what he was talking about.
Nice flex, Nate.
I mean... It's because I'm not trying to flex. I'm trying to explain that I am so much of a nerd. That
flexing is when a muscle contracts.
Let me tell you about abduction and adduction.
What I mean is I'm such a nerd that it's like, oh, wait, I know what an apogee is, you know. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I like this kind of thing, but it is a lot. It is a lot. And the third part, of the third section, because there is technically a story, but because all the characters in the first 600 pages are dead, because it's 5,000 years later, and it's entirely new things, entirely new, disconnected, and largely disconnected, it's like, this just isn't interesting anymore. And the actual plot he's doing in the third part is also just not very good either.
Also, he made the Children of Julia also all traitors.
Was the one that betrays them a Julian?
She was the Julian, yeah. She was, you know, they're noted spies and traitors. That's what they do.
I know who he voted for.
Gary Johnson. Book won the, I forget what it was.
Does Reason Magazine give out a
No, it was the Libertarian book? Sci-Fi Book Award. I forget what it's called, but it won that.
You know what? It never mentioned the taxes Libby. Once.
It never mentioned... independent postal systems once.
They let it down
in space. All milk is raw because you can't boil it.
So anyway, I liked it, but it is incredibly long, and the third part kind of sucks.
It kind of read at times like, you know, when you're taking a foreign language in high school and in your textbook, every beginning of a chapter, there's like a group of people having a conversation based around what that chapter is going to be like. It was kind of like that.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, then we're going to space. What's in space? Well, let me tell you.
What kind of things would you bring to space?
Is that subjunctive? I still don't know. I still don't know what a subjunctive is.
Subjunctive is the conditional, I wish.
Like,
hypothetical, basically.
That's dumb that there's its own tense for that.
Well, English does it with what the fuck are they called? Modal modifiers? Like, I wish, I think, I prefer kind of words. I feel like that's what those are called, but I could be wrong about that.
Those are subjunctive.
Whereas other languages just like do an even stupider ending to the word. And they go through their whole lives in those countries thinking this is normal. And that's why we left them off the fucking space arc in this book.
And if you just use a regular verb conjugation, they're like, I don't understand. You expressed a hypothetical that you spoke as if it was finite. What bizarre double reality do you live in?
I need a 3-hour afternoon nap to process. So I guess I was torn on the book, honestly. I liked all of his ideas and the setups and the conflicts, of which there are about 724. We're like, oh, what's going to happen here? I don't understand that physics concept either. That's cool. Very entertaining to me. And I will say that his fucking raw, balls deep fucking of the physics textbook passages actually didn't strike me as that didactic. I kind of liked them. I was like, I feel like I'm learning.
My I retained problem, none of it.
Oh, of course, none. Never any. I mean, at a certain point in the very, very beginning, I was like, oh, man, they would never take me into space. Like, so I don't fucking
absolutely
need to know
not.
This.
Absolutely not. It would clog every space toilet.
I would. I mean, like, I was like, oh. I actually had the thought briefly when I was dropping my kid off at camp and seeing all the much wealthier families that drop their kid off at camp. Like, I guess I'd have to kind of prep my kid for that test to get into space now.
She'd be a bunker kid.
Fucking brutal.
She might have inherited your shits.
No.
In this strongly eugenics based part three.
It is a bit much, part three. Cause they have the fucking possibility of taking a cell from the other dead people. And they just don't.
No, they ate every cell.
They didn't, though. They buried them in the moon. And I'm sorry, if he could just be like, listen, they do IVF fertilization with just like a space needle, they could take the cell from dead Neil deGrasse Tyson and put it into somebody's, you know, ovum or whatever.
Space hoo-ha.
And have a more...
Spoo-ha.
And have a more genetically diverse pool. But all of these bratty women just go, no, my babies are the best. And they go, yeah, fuck it, whatever. Fuck you, Louisa, you're too old to have kids. And she goes, I am. And then she disappears from the book.
No, there are the Louisans who are the mixed race kids sometimes, or like the people who don't feel like at home anywhere else, and they just kind of use her as their adoptive race or some weird shit. Didn't really make much sense.
The Rachel Dolezals of space. But they fucking could have taken other genetic material from the cadavers. And
I guess they felt like they didn't need to because they could just edit it and like, oh, I could like take on a bunch of old dead cum, or I could just like make my kids smarter by putting a T where an A is.
But then they also could have made way more diversity. They could have created a scenario where there weren't 5,000 years later, still 7 distinct races.
Well, there was
could
more
have
than
done
seven
a better job.
Aida had like 7 or 8 by herself.
But yeah, but everyone knew that what they could have also done is just fuck. They should have just killed her right out. They were like, listen, we landed on the fuck you. We don't need Italians in space. In space, no one can hear your hands. They just killed her. They could have just smothered her in her sleep. And they're like, Aida sleeps with the fishes. They should have just gotten rid of her. But then they should have struck, like, we need to create incredible diversity. Because inbreeding is, one, gross. Two, only hot if it's your stepsister. And three, not fucking good for people. It is
weird that, you know, they came down to humanity's ended. We are all that's left. What should we do? Well, let's immediately start dividing ourselves into different races again. Like, step one.
Yeah, step one was like, what are your thoughts on cheekbones? They started from that.
So do you feel like this was a... Are you happy you picked this one?
I'm glad we did it, yeah.
I'm glad we did it. It was on my list of things to read, and I was just like, I'm never going to read a 900-page book while we're doing this shit, so...
You know, Not only did I read it, I read a physical copy of this book. I went to the library and took it out.
That's like exercise, just carrying it around.
It was like holding a cinder block. I would try to... I couldn't find the right position to lay on the couch and read it without it fucking cutting off my circulation or hitting me in the face.
It's so heavy.
It was a hardcover conversion, too. It was like ridiculous. It was meant for 0G.
It's like a fucking illuminated manuscript.
I think it was leather bound. It was on vellum. I wanted to read it too. And you know what, Nate? As much as I shit on it this whole last 3.5 days we've been talking about it, mm-hmm. It's pretty fun.
All right, good. Good. Part three still sucks.
I think he has really cool ideas. He just needs somebody to be like, dude, where the fuck are you going with this?
The people who love him like him for that. No one's like, wow, really good at plot and character development.
Oh, yeah. The character development is, I am an obedient Asian woman. No one's, I'm president of America, bitch.
And he's like, I am Russian. Russians like discipline. Also, I am vaguely gay. Just kidding. I am definitely gay.
I will break you.
Like beaver, break tree with my beaver.
Damn. That's his nice beaver.
I'm sure we'll do another Stevenson one day.
Yeah, I want to read Cryptonomicon because I like cryptography. So I
Cryptonomicon, if you like cryptography, that's like personally made for you because that's all that fucking book is.
I like crypto.
It was very good. I liked it a lot. But it is even longer than this.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was readable. It went. He's a great writer. I just think, I don't think I've ever said this. This book would have been better as a series. This should have been 4 books and like move things around a little bit, stretch some stuff out, contract some stuff, and you could have 4 really good episodes in a, and there should have been something else. And then he could have created a whole fucking, you know, world of...
You could have done a whole book from the perspective of the Arkies.
Oh my God. Oh yeah.
But he wouldn't because he thinks people that don't do science are worthless. So he killed them all off.
And one of them voted for Kucinich in 2000. So they can't be kept alive. But I liked it at the end of the day, Nate. I gave it 3 stars because it's a fucking mess of a plot, but it was fun.
Well, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter @drunkguysbc.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram @drunkguysbookclub.
I forgot to mention the Patreon 2 days ago. Shit, we have one of those. It's too late. No one's listening now.
They know. They also know to join us on Goodreads, where we read 7 books. And then stop. Forever.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.